It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro. Backstage with the golden brace. Tales from the stands to the batter's cage. The kind of stories that'll keep you engaged. Backstage with the golden brace.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Phillies Backstage. Tom Burgoyne, John Brazier, and John, he's a former Eagle. He's a former Pro Bowler. He's a former NFC Conference champion. He is, but what he's really known for is his baseball prowess.
Yes, because I witnessed it, Tom. this is going back several years. Our next guest can tell us the exact year. But I bring him down, and his first at bat.
To Fantasy Camp.
At Fantasy Camp. Was against Ricky Pitalico, and he took Ricky deep. I witnessed it, went over the fence deep on Ashburn Field.
That's right.
Let's bring him on right now. WIP's Ike Reese. What's up, Ike?
Tom, John, hey, thanks for having me, guys. Listen, I don't have many baseball memories in my life because, believe me, my little league days weren't anything to write home about. But I will say my experience at Philly's Fantasy Camp, the 2 years that I was down there, particularly that first year where I got the home run off of Ricky Pitalico, Ricky Bo, I got to admit, man, it's one of the greatest athletic feats of my lifetime. I just got to throw that out
there.
Isn't that
hilarious?
Do,
he played
man.
In the Super Bowl. Right? He was in the Pro Bowl, and like that was one of the greatest feats. That's
seriously,
awesome.
Man. I never hit a home run in Little League, so, you know.
Is that right? Really, Ike?
Well, I never hit the ball over the fence over is what I'm fence. Saying. Yeah, you get Little League home runs when the ball goes through
so
somebody's
set it
legs.
Up. What, set it up. What happened that day that you – I mean, Ricky's no slouch.
Well, no. It's, I
you know
be,
he's not giving me a cream puff either. It's Ricky Pitalico.
Well, you remember the first pitch he threw?
Yeah, he threw
the
it at
The first pitch
you.
He threw, he, like, he literally threw it at me. Yeah, right? So that really ruined me, honestly. Yeah. But I got to give Ricky credit because he kind of explained this to me afterwards when I was feeling good about myself, about taking him over the fence. You know, pitchers, they know how to place the ball. So he got a chance to see a couple of my swings, and it didn't take him long to figure out where he wanted to place the ball that would give me a chance.
Where your where your hole is, where your lack of hole is.
Yeah,
right? So, whatever your sweet spot.
So
sweet
yeah, spot. See, he knew where to put it at, and I actually believe him when he says it because it made sense to me because I'm just up there swinging, right? I'm swinging, and I caught it, man. I caught it pretty good, and John, to tell you, man,
people went nuts.
It was almost as good as hitting a home run in the World Series, man. Oh, I mean, that's what it felt like to
that's
me.
That's beautiful.
But I like too, to you learned too that baseball is a hard game, right?
Oh, because, for sure, yes.
Because you were on a high right there, and then I remember you struggled, right?
Well, did I strike out the next eight times?
Right, right, you did. But then you came back. You personified the base of the hard. What it takes to become a good baseball player because you struggled, but then you came back, and I think one of my favorite parts other than taking Pitalico over the wall was when you did I think you had almost like a Little League home run, didn't you?
I did, yeah. My legs gave out on me coming
around. They were throwing the ball all around the infield.
So, I hit a good one. I hit a nice shot out to the outfield.
Would have been a double.
It probably was a double. Yeah, okay. That's probably what it was. But it's a good shout out to the outfield. And when I'm coming around second base, I'm realizing, okay, probably got an older gentleman out there in the outfield. The ball's not going to get here,
right?
You know, at the rate that it normally would. But it was a good – he got it to the relay guy. I'm coming around third, and – all of a sudden, my legs just gave out.
Sniper hit you. Sniper
went down? You went down?
He's dead.
Oh.
And then he kind of was trying to get
hold
up.
Hold on. So the best part, is not me going down. Like that's the funniest visual part of it. The best part was me trying to crawl to home plate because I couldn't get back up. I did beat the throw. Because it was all throw to home plate. Yeah, that just goes to show you the type of talent that was out there in fantasy camp.
He needed one of those life alerts. I'm falling, but I can't get up.
Oh, yeah, my God. And that was – my kids were out there, too. So, you know, part of me was trying to show off in front of my kids, and then they saw that. That was sort of embarrassing. But, yeah, that was – that also let me know – I had retired at the right time you know, going to first base, I'm feeling good. Rounding first base, I'm going to second. I'm like, okay, yeah, I still got the speed because I still probably was the fastest guy out there. Yes.
Not even a question.
So I still was the fastest guy out there. But by the time I got between second and third base, I could feel it. I knew I was starting to lose a little bit of stamina. Yeah, yeah. I rounded third, man. It's like 3/4 home. I started stumbling, and I probably made it halfway through third and home plate before I hit the ground.
And started crawling.
Then I had to crawl the rest of the way there. Yeah,
but, Ike, you were, you know, of
and your kids saw that.
Of the WIP people, right, you were well, first of all, Joe Conklin came down a couple years, and Joe Conklin's, I think, first game, he hurt his finger, and I went into the trainer's room after the game, and he literally is sitting on a chair, not in the hot tub. He's sitting in a chair, and he's got his finger,
dipped
into the hot tub. No. And then Joe DeCamera, he came down a couple times, and he was hurt.
How bad was that?
I think his feelings were hurt before he even took an at-bat. I mean, he hurt everything, groin, knee, whatever.
Yeah, I've never seen somebody get his injured at something that is supposed to be at your leisure,
right?
As much as Joe DeCamera has the years that he went down to fantasy
camp. He was Danny Tartable of fantasy camp.
Yeah, right? One at bat and that's it. Right. And done.
Exactly, right.
Oh, that's killer.
That was good times, though. I really did have fun with it, man. It was and I'm saying this, I really did appreciate it, man. It was a good experience for me. Especially I was so fresh out of playing in the NFL,
right?
You know, it gave me a newfound respect for the sport of baseball and playing the sport of baseball with these guys go through 162 times throughout the year and going into the playoffs. It's you realize how difficult it looks like it's a leisurely sport, right? Because there's a lot of standing around, but then you say to yourself, man, first of all, it's hard to hit the baseball. I had to realize that. It's hard to get an actual hit, let alone put the bat on the ball. And then secondly, being out there and fielding your position and doing that every night, man, especially the guys that are in the outfield. Those guys that are out there in the outfield, that's a lot of ground to cover. And those guys out there, man, I gained a lot of respect.
Well, plus you got to hang out with a lot of the former Phillies guys, right?
That was the best part.
Yeah, you were managed by – was Mickey one of your managers?
Yeah, Mickey. Yep. Mickey, well, I had Greg. I had the Bull the first year, I believe.
Right. Well, he just gave you grunts.
Yeah, I had the Bull the first year, and then I had Mickey my second year.
Okay.
I think I had Mickey my second year. So I got to give a shout-out to great Phillies hitting coach Milt Thompson, who put extra work in with
me. He helped you along.
I mean, the first day was embarrassing enough, so I was like, you know what? I may not be the best player here, but I can't be the worst player here. So, yeah, I got to at least be able to put the bat on the ball. And if I could just put it in play, I'll use my speed to be able to make up for everything else.
And did you put into practice what he told you? Like, did you?
Of course I did.
Yeah, because he likes to tell about chopping wood.
Wood through the zone. Yep. Like, I still remember these things now.
Yeah.
I'm taking part of this to my golf swing, too, which doesn't really help me out.
No, that won't help.
Yes. But, yes, man, he worked countless hours with me. And between Dickie Knowles and Bull, Greg Luzinski, they gave me enough they razzed me enough that the competitive side of me, they just made me have to go out and try harder. Yeah. Yes, it did, man.
So they're teaching, and then like you mentioned about just hanging out with the guys, like the after the game, and you're going out in the hotel lobby, or if you're going to a couple of the places out, hanging with the campers, hanging with the players. What was that like?
It was the best. It really was. That allowed me to, you know. Growing up in locker rooms and being with guys, that's the one thing that we as players, we don't realize it until afterwards, but we miss the most. We missed hanging around in the locker room, shooting the breeze, lying about whatever you did the night before or what have you, you know, just telling stories. And so you miss that when you leave the game. And I found out during those 2 years, I'm like, baseball players have the best stories. Like, they had the best, you know, on the road stories, you know, throughout the year. So
you spend more time with them in any other sport.
Exactly.
You spend more time with your teammates.
Yeah, so sitting around listening to all those guys just tell stories. And, you know, a lot of the guys were from the 90s teams, that 93 team where, you know, a lot of the great personalities were there. I got a chance to just honestly not be a part of the conversation so much, but sit back and just listen.
Yeah.
And so I got a chance to observe and listen to that. You know, guys like Danny Jackson, who had stopped down. I can't remember if it was the first year or the second year. You know, I grew up, I'm a Cincinnati Reds fan. You know, I grew up watching the Reds, and Danny Jackson's part of the last World Series team that won the World Series in Cincinnati in 1990. So he was a part of that starting rotation. But knowing that he was a part of this Phillies team as well, and sitting back and listening to him tell stories about Jose Rios and some of the guys back, because you know me, as a Reds fan, I had to find time to sneak my own little Cincinnati Reds questions in about the Nasty Boys and how crazy Lou Piniella was as a manager and all those things. But listening to the guys just talk about their time as being teammates and recanting the 93 playoff run all the way up to the World Series. Like, that was awesome to do, man. I'm a fan of sports. So, you know, sometimes when you know, as fortunate as I was to be a professional athlete and be around a lot of those guys, you know, the one thing gets lost on you is that kid side of you where you dare to dream to be a professional athlete and what it would be like to be in the locker room or what have you, or be on the field during those moments. So when I'm around the guys that played before me, you know, I get to be a kid again.
Right.
You know, and that's in any sport, baseball, basketball, or football. I get to remember when I was a kid and looked up watching these guys play. So that's what it was like for me, listening to those guys talk about their time.
Well, let's take you back as a kid, because you grew up in Cincinnati, as you just mentioned, and you said you played baseball, obviously played football. When did you start playing the sports? And the question I try to ask a lot of people is, at what point did you realize that you're going to make a living out of playing a sport? So take us into a young Ike Reese.
Well, as a youth, you know, you and I have four brothers. So my mother, she had us. We pretty much had to play everything to keep us busy. You
right.
know, so
where do you fall in the order?
Second oldest.
Okay.
Second oldest. Obviously the best athlete in the group.
Do they know that?
Yes, they know that. They didn't know that then, but they know it now.
There's
no more debate. There's always one brother who likes to argue.
Because I can tell you, me and my two older brothers have arguments still to this day.
Yeah, there's always the one brother. He's actually the smallest one of the group, but he likes to tell you that he was the better athlete. So playing Little League Baseball at the Boys Club, Boys and Girls Club. You pretty much signed up for all sports. The funny thing is, I did not play football. I like playing football in the neighborhood, but the whole idea of putting on pads, a helmet, hitting each other, I wasn't necessarily high on that. So basketball was a sport that I truly enjoyed playing as a youth. And as I got older, as I came from like the 7, 8, 9, 10 range, you know, you start to get to middle school and high school, I started to gravitate towards more football and basketball. Baseball I enjoyed, it was so hard to hit. So as you get, some kids are better than other kids, and they usually are the pitchers. Mm-hmm. So the guys who throw the hardest, they're standing on the mound.
Pitcher, you know, shortstop.
Yeah, so, you know, I played in the outfield, right, because I was left-handed. So I didn't realize at this point, you know, they don't have left-handers in the infield unless they're first baseman. So I was in the outfield, and in the Little League, very few balls got hit to the outfield.
Right.
So it's boring to me standing out there, you know. So the only thing I'm looking forward to is getting my chance to bat. And I'm up there swinging. Like, I don't care if the ball is up high, is down low. I just want to hit the ball. So
You got your launch angle, right?
I knew, you know what it was? I knew I wanted to be part of the action. So in order to be part of the action, you got to hit the ball, right? So I didn't have much success at doing that, so I got frustrated with baseball as a youngin. I gravitated more towards basketball.
Were you like a lefty shooting guard?
Yeah, or forward.
Forward, okay. Yeah. Probably guard younger, then moved to forward?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So, yeah, playing basketball, I love that, man. That was what I thought I was supposed to do. You know, they, you know, and growing up in the '80s, you know, that's when, you know, being from Cincinnati, we didn't have an NBA team. Yeah. So the Lakers, Magic Johnson, that was the team. James Worthy, that's what you wanted to do and what you wanted to be. So I kind of thought that's where I was supposed to go as far as basketball. I got to high school, and my high school coach was like, you know, you know, and I played for a good high school, the basketball school. They were pretty good. And, you know, I'm at that time, I have a higher opinion of my own skills than the coaches do or what have you. So, you know, one day the football coach came up to me, happened to be the gym teacher as well, and he's like, listen, I know you love playing basketball, but, you know, I think you got a future in football. Like, I think you got a future in football. And part is because I'm playing more of a defensive role in basketball than I am a scorer's role in basketball. So, you know, he asked me to come out.
And how big were you? Are you bigger than most of your classmates at this point?
No.
The same size?
Probably. I'm probably bigger than most from a tall standpoint, but I've always been lean. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in high school, if I was 6'2", 6'3", I probably weighed 190 pounds. So I'm tall and lean, right. Versus being big or what have you. So I kind of always had a basketball sort of body that I've tried to, but I got a football player's mentality. Right. So that worked out for me when I went out for the I didn't have to go out. He asked me to come out. We didn't have enough guys playing football at that time. So he's actually looking for kids around the school to come play football. And so that's what got me in. I came out. I always enjoyed playing the sport in a neighborhood sense. Like, we would play on Saturday mornings. You play in the neighborhood. I just didn't like the whole equipment thing, putting on shoulder pads and a helmet. And so once I got past that, found out that I had a niche in playing football, a knack for playing the sport. And so, you know.
Always defense, Ike, or did you ever? No, you I played. Quarterback,
no, the funny thing is, I'm wide receiver, man. Wide receiver. So, I had good height.
Yeah, you were tall.
And I had decent speed.
Yeah.
So I wanted to play wide out. And, you know, we had a couple other wide outs on the team. Back then, we ran a run and shoot, so you needed four wide receivers. So I happened to be one of them. But at the same time, the coach felt like, you know, I could use you on defense. You know, again, you got an aggressive mentality, so I need guys that I can sort of mold into a sort of a defensive player. And so eventually I bought into it, and it worked out for me. It worked out for me. You know, Michigan State and a couple of other schools showed interest in me and, you know, offered me a scholarship at that time. So,
what other schools did you look at?
University of Cincinnati, who I was actually recruited by, John Harbaugh. That John Harbaugh.
Yeah,
the coach is the Baltimore Ravens. Yeah, so I've been knowing Coach since I was like 17 years old when he was recruiting me. He was a defensive back coach at the University of Cincinnati at this time. So they offered me, Ball State University offered me, and Illinois.
Why Michigan University. State?
I wanted the Big Ten. So it was either going to be Michigan State or Illinois.
And they're recruiting you as a linebacker, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And so Michigan State, I don't know. I took the visit to Michigan State, and I just enjoyed it. I enjoyed the weekend up there. For whatever reason, it felt natural to me.
Well, you were talking about the Lakers, Magic Johnson. You know, is that you were following Magic's footsteps?
You know what?
Or what?
Yes, at that time. That wasn't at the forefront of my mind, but yes, that certainly helped.
Yeah.
Once I got to Michigan State and realized, like, oh, yeah, Magic Johnson played for Michigan State. So, yes. But, yeah, I for whatever reason, I just enjoyed the visit. I enjoyed the visit up there, and, you know, it was the first visit that I took.
Yeah.
And I wind up canceling the other visits. And I told my mother, I'm like, yeah, this is where we're going. Like, this is where I want to go.
Yeah.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. bit.
Yeah, so it was great and 4 years there, right?
And it's five years, I had a red shirt.
Yeah.
So he played for George Perlis, right, first. But then, you know who his coach was, Tom? Nick Saban.
Yeah.
Nick Saban for 3 years, right?
Yeah.
Three or four years, I guess.
3 years, yeah.
3 years.
Yeah.
So what was Nick Saban like? Could you, if you were back then, take yourself in your college days, could you look forward in a crystal ball and see that Nick Saban would be one of the all-time greatest college coaches ever?
No. Not in my wildest dreams. And not because he wasn't a great coach at the time. I was just too young to be able to see it.
Right.
And recognize how fortunate I was to have this guy as my head coach. Because what you see with coach is what you get. And, you know, so that personality, that demanding sort of presence for perfection and all of those things, you know, when you're young, you know, some guys can gravitate to that automatically as what they thrive to have and thirst to have. And then there are some guys that have to grow to appreciate that. And I was one of those guys that, you know, initially you sort of resist that because you feel like everything is personal. You feel like you're being coached hard because he doesn't like you or what have you. And so you don't realize until – you hope you realize it sooner rather than later. And fortunately, I did. It didn't take me long to realize. It probably took me about a season to realize how beneficial – it was to have him as a coach. And so I learned so much about the game of football. I was more of a raw, talented person versus understanding why I was doing what I was being asked to do. I just did it.
Right.
You know, and once I understood why he was asking us to do the things that he asked us to do and he demanded for us to do, it made more sense to me and it made you want to even work that much harder to accomplish those things that he set out for us as a team. I just wish he had I got what I could out of him, and I think he made me a better player. I think he made me a NFL player in the 3 years I got to be with him. I wish the university would have gotten the chance to have him much longer because they could have achieved much more success. But he left us with a guy like Mark D'Antonio, who was the defensive back coach on that staff while I was there. And he obviously went on to be arguably the greatest coach in college, in our university's history during his time there. But playing for coach, I think watching him afterwards really gave me a greater appreciation. You know, as you look back on your career and you look back on some of the teaching moments and the lessons that, like I said, you may have taken offense to in the moment, but as you get older, you get to say, man, okay, that's what he was trying to teach us. That's what he was trying to get accomplished, you know, with us there. So I've certainly have grown to appreciate that in my later years.
So your last year at Michigan State, though, did you think, you know, before you get drafted, were you thinking, I'm pretty confident I'm going to get drafted in the NFL? Or were you, when you got drafted, were you surprised? What was your mindset going into that, going into the NFL draft?
I honestly thought after my junior year I could be drafted. And I thought about coming out after my junior year. and coach wasn't happy about that. Not that he wasn't happy that I was thinking about coming out. He wasn't happy that the way he found out about it. So,
oops.
Yeah, this was a lesson for me in media training because someone who had worked on a radio station in Detroit who was a former Michigan State Spartan that was close to the program, you know, I'm sort of just talking to him in a casual conversation.
Right. and giving him
my thoughts on what I was thinking about doing. And I think he wound up going on the air with it a few days later. And I think Coach was a frequent guest on the show. And he sort of got asked about it, and he wasn't necessarily happy about that. So that was my first lesson in nothing is off the record when you say something.
But you stayed.
Yeah, but I wound up staying. Because he advised me to stay. Coach Saban did. He thought that it would be more beneficial to me that I was getting interest and, you know, coaches had been asking about me at the NFL level. But obviously they give you the pros and cons of what they think you need to work on and what you need to get better at. And Coach was always honest about those things. So I took his advice, stayed my senior year, was happy that I stayed my senior year. Wish we could have been better my last year overall as a team. But to me, it was my best year as a player. Just from, I felt I was more prepared that year going in,
yeah,
and to do all the things that I did as a player. That year, when I got accomplished my last year, I was happy with, and I was happy that I stayed. So, you know, yeah, at some point you kind of feel like, yeah, you're good enough to play at the next level. You don't, you, and honestly, it's a belief you have as a young, confident young player.
Sure.
You don't really know until you actually get to that next level and realize what it means to be at the next level. But as far as having the confidence and the wherewithal that I could do it, it probably was after my junior year.
Yep, and it was 1998. You got drafted by the Eagles, fifth round. What do you remember? Did you get a phone call? Did you know anything about the Eagles going into
it? Oh, sure. I talked to them at the combine, so I knew there was some interest there. They didn't bring me in for a personal visit or individual workout, so I didn't know how interested they were. And so it just so happened my former – he was my offensive lines coach at Michigan State, Jim Bowman, my senior year, really under Nick Saban, my whole time under Nick Saban, but he had left to take the job with the Eagles as tight ends coach.
Oh.
So he was on the staff, and – John Harbaugh was on the staff as special teams coach. So long story short, I wound up getting a call on that Sunday morning from the Eagles, and it was Coach Bowman. And he was like, you know, I got somebody here that wants to talk to you. And it was Ray. It was Coach Ray Rhodes.
Ray Rhodes, yeah.
Yeah, so they put Ray on the phone, and, you know, and Ray's only way Coach Ray could give it to you was, you know, it was, hey, man. Listen, what you think about being an Eagle? I said, Coach, I'm ready if you come and get me. He said, all right, goddammit. About to draft you.
And we're going to burn everything down. And, you know, did he get all fired up?
You know how Ray was. I tried to clean it up as best I could. But those that know, the know Coach Rose know he had a way with words. So, yeah, that was that was him on draft day.
And unfortunately, you know, boy, you know, that first season with the Eagles, go 3-13. Ray is, you know, on his way out eventually, does leave. I mean, how difficult was that first season just watching Ray, who I imagine you admired, you
had
know,
a lot
go
of,
through
had a lot,
that?
Oh, yeah, had a lot of admiration for him and Emmett Thomas, who was our defensive coordinator, Hall of Famer, Emmett Thomas. And so, you know, it was the first team that drafted me. I remember meeting them at the combine. I remember having a good visit with them. I remember feeling good about the Eagles. You know, after the combine, I had, along with other teams, but, you know, watching the Eagles defense and watching Willie T play in that defense and seeing William Thomas, seeing how I could fit in sort of that mold because our bodies are very similar, so we were very similar in the style of play that we had. So, you know, coming here and knowing the history of the Eagles, you know, growing up, what I knew about the Eagles was Buddy Ryan, Reggie White, Randall Cunningham, Chris Carter, Harold Carmichael, Mike Quick, you know, Wilbur Montgomery. Those are the guys that I knew as far as.
And a great defensive tradition, too.
Yeah, I mean, Jerome Brown, all of that, Seth Joyner.
Yeah.
I knew all of that, you know. And so, and to be honest, having a African-American quarterback, you know, on a football team was appealing. So, you know, watching the Eagles or the Oilers or Washington when they won with Doug Williams, to be, you know, black kid from Cincinnati, that's when you outside of rooting for my home team, those are the teams that I sort of rooted for because of those things. So the Eagles were always on my radar. So to come here and get drafted here, I was excited about that, a major city, Philadelphia. And it was tough that first year. It was tough that first year. A lot of uncertainty. You didn't know what the future held.
Well, the three quarterbacks, too. You know, I looked it up. I forgot. Oh, my gosh. Bobby Hoying, Coy Detmer, Rodney Pete. Each won one game and a total of seven touchdowns in the air. I mean, just not, you know, that whole season, seven touchdowns.
Total of seven touchdowns.
I went to that one game. I think it was,
that was it.
You guys tied against Baltimore because I went to that game and Hoying, it might have been Hoying's first start. You remember that game?
No, that was the year before me. That was the
year before
me.
You, okay.
Yeah. I still remember the three teams we beat. We beat Washington, we beat Detroit, and we beat the Rams.
Oh.
Those are the three teams we beat.
Like for Christmas, my My mom got us all Bobby Hoying jersey. My whole family. There's a picture of us all in front of the Christmas tree wearing our Bobby Hoying jerseys.
Yeah.
Oh man, so that was a tough year.
So obviously, if you watch this, not jumping way forward, but you watch Super Bowl this year, Andy Reid, one of the greatest coaches of all time.
Yeah.
And you were lucky enough to be coach under Andy Reid.
Sure.
And also Jim Johnson, who is a phenomenal, one of the great defensive coaches.
Yeah. I've been blessed to be around some great football minds. George Perlis, Hank Buller, Dr. Defense, for those who don't know. You guys are old enough to know Dr. Defense, Hank Buller. Nick Saban, Dean Pease. You know, I played under Dean Pease. He was our defensive coordinator in Michigan State. People recognize Coach Pease for how great he's been at the NFL level for so many years, winning Super Bowls with New England as their defensive coordinator. I had him as my DC at Michigan State.
That was a great staff at Michigan State.
Yeah. You know, and then you go to because Mark D'Antonio was on that staff as well. Then you go to Ray Rhodes and Emmett Thomas. I got coached defensively by those guys, to Coach Reid, who's in the conversation as the greatest coach of all time and could be by the time he's done coaching, certainly on that short list of 4 to 5 guys of the greatest coaches of all time. And I had the great Jim Johnson as my defensive coordinator. And that's not even to mention the guys I played for from a positional standpoint. John Harbaugh, who's going to be a Hall of Fame coach when he's done in Baltimore coaching. He was my special teams coach. Had Ron Rivera as my linebacker coach initially. And then I had Steve Spagnuolo, who's been a defensive coordinator for 4 Super Bowl champions.
What we're saying is it's not you, it's the coaches.
Hey, but what we're saying is smart people surround themselves with people that are even smarter than they are. So, you know how to surround yourself with
good people. That is incredible
when
you really think about it. Yes. You played for, in college, probably go down as one of the greatest, if not
greatest college coach. No, you can go ahead and say it, the greatest college coach ever.
And you're going to go down, and Andy Reid might be, at the end of it, the greatest NFL coach.
Certainly one of the 5 greatest,
That's unbelievable.
Yeah. And honestly, playing for Jim Johnson, Coach Reid was our head coach overall, but I didn't play offense. So, I didn't get the benefit of having him as a personal coach as some of those guys on that side of the ball do. But I felt equally as honored to have Jim Johnson as our defensive coordinator. And even the guys I played with, man, I played with Brian Dawkins and Troy Vincent and Hugh Douglas and Jeremiah Trotter. I played with some guys on defense that, man, they really were at the top of their game during that era of football. Some of the best players during that time. And I was fortunate enough to learn from those guys and play with those guys.
Tell us about 2004. Obviously, we're just coming off Super Bowl, watching Kansas City and 49ers. The big pageantry, the hoopla, just everything. When you played in 2004, I know it's easy to say, well, it's just a game, right? You always hear, it's just a game, another game. I've done this millions of times. But there's got to be something like, are there butterflies in your stomach? Is it just another game?
For the Super Bowl?
Yeah, when you're playing the Super Bowl?
It's not just another game.
I know, right?
Yeah.
I know everyone says that.
We try to.
To say that.
Yeah, and that's the way you have to try to approach it so that you can go out there and win the game. And those that can control their emotions and all those things the best usually perform the best. But it's obviously not just another game. I mean, the week leading up to it, the pregame, how long halftime is, and the finality of not winning it or winning it at the end, that confetti's coming down one way or the other. And either you're a part of the celebration or you're the team walking off the field with your head down. And unfortunately, I was a part of that. But being in that game it's probably at the top of the list when you think about the greatest games you play in. Right, and the significance of the game and how difficult it is to get to that game and how many great players who've not had the chance. Barry Sanders never had the chance to play in that game, and I think he's the greatest running back ever, maybe one of the greatest football players I've ever seen. And he wasn't fortunate enough to play in that game. And a lot of players that have donned these uniforms don't necessarily get that opportunity. So I certainly appreciate it that opportunity. But the fact that, A, we didn't have more opportunities literally in the game, and then we didn't win one of them. That's probably the hardest thing of watching Coach Reed win right now.
Yeah, I know. Why didn't we do that in 04?
Yeah, because you know what? It clearly says it was us, not him. It was us as the players, not him.
Hey, like, it was us. You know, in 1980, when the Eagles made it, you know, Vermeil, you know, when they made that NFC Championship game, beat the Cowboys, and the talk was Vermeil had the team pretty tight. They thought that was their Super Bowl, that game at the Vet, and then when they got to New Orleans, but they were tight also. They were tight. And how did Andy approach that 2004 Super Bowl in terms of the preparation and being down there? Were you allowed to go out? Did he lock all the doors? You know, how was that?
Well, we were allowed to go out. there were curfews every night. I do remember that, being a curfew. And quite frankly, for me, I didn't mind it. I didn't mind it. This is our one opportunity to go be world champions. All that other stuff can wait as far as I'm concerned. And so if there were guys that were bothered that we had to be in by 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock, then you've lost track of why we're here.
We're here
to win the Super Bowl. We're not here to party with everybody else. The reason they're here partying because they're not playing in the Super Bowl. Like, we're here to win a championship. So I didn't have a problem with it. And there were curfews. I didn't think they were like 11 o'clock curfews or 12 o'clock curfews. If I can remember correctly, I think Friday night Friday night, maybe it got down to 1 o'clock. I think early in the week it was 2 o'clock. Okay. Here was the problem. Where we were staying at was an hour outside of where all the action was.
Because Jacksonville is really spread out.
Yeah, it is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we're staying out at Ponte Vedra, the TPC.
Right.
Sawgrass. That's where we were staying at, the hotel where they had a golf course at. And it was like a 45-minute to an hour ride to the city.
Probably by design, obviously, right?
Yeah.
Which, I'm okay with that. And so, you know, I didn't have a problem with it. That's probably why. I mean, I was ready to go. I was fresh as the daisies on Sunday when Super Bowl Sunday came. I couldn't get to the stadium. I couldn't get to the stadium early enough. I wanted to be out there. I wanted to be on the field. I wanted to see the opposite logos painted in the grass. This is a game I've watched since I was like 11 years old, Super Bowl Sunday. It's like a holiday in the house. And to finally be a part of it after so many disappointments the years before, I refuse to allow anything to distract me from that.
Yeah.
But I can't speak for everybody.
Right. Yeah. You also got a firsthand view of one of the greatest – we're talking about some of the greatest college coaches, some of the greatest NFL coaches. Well, obviously your opponent that day guy might go down as one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time.
Yeah.
What was it like watching or playing against Tom Brady?
I'd played against him, obviously, prior to that. I think being in that game, what you realize is, and they had been two-time champions already, they had began to establish an aura that they don't beat themselves. Usually you have to beat them, so you almost have to play a perfect game, and you realize every possession matters. So the one thing about going up against those guys during that time is that when you didn't score or you didn't take advantage of a great opportunity, you almost felt it twofold.
Right. Yeah.
Right? It's like, oh, man, we missed out on a chance to score there, or we didn't capitalize on this. So, you know, he hadn't yet established the aura that he would begin to establish. And you got to realize, I had to tell my kids this, right, because you got to have some things as a former player that you can brag about.
Sure.
Life, just another. But I remember when Tom Brady was on the sideline watching me play at Michigan.
Right, I was going to say, did
he's
you guys
– backup at Michigan.
Yeah, yes, I was going to say, so you guys did cross over a couple years.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, we crossed paths, yeah. Yeah, I was on the field, though. He was there watching.
Yeah,
he was over there watching as a backup for several years at the University of Michigan. So,
who was the starter then?
You had either Brian Griese or you had Chad Hutchison, maybe, I think. Yeah, or Chad Henne, one of those two.
And then he got to the pros and sitting behind Drew Bledsoe, right?
Yeah. So, you know, Tom hadn't become the GOAT just yet. Right, he wasn't necessarily revered that way. That would come later.
Right.
So I still sort of remember the earlier days of Tom Brady when, you know, he relied on a great defense.
Yeah.
Adam Vinatieri in a great kicking game, and he was sort of the game manager.
It's a common theme, Tom, like that he's seen these people, like, and then they go on to become the greatest. Just like when we're going to be go on
podcaster. All you got to do is let me touch you. You know, I touched the podcast, and now you guys are going to be blessed.
Yeah, we're glowing now, John. Switching it up a little bit, like to me, you're always like the heart and soul guy of the Eagles. You know, you're one of those guys, and a leader too, right, in the locker room. And John and I talk about Darren Dalton a lot on our podcast, and part of his thing was kind of bringing that message from the coach, their manager Jim Fregosi, into the club. You know, whether it's another practice or, hey guys, you know, this is what we're doing. Did you feel like you had that kind of role in the locker room?
Sure.
A guy who had to kind of bring that the coach's message to the players.
Yeah, and I embraced it. You know, some guys aren't comfortable doing that. Some guys, you know, want to lead by example. And to each is their own when you're in your comfort zone. I just never had a problem with it. You know, I always felt like I was sort of a overachiever. Wasn't the biggest, wasn't the fastest, wasn't the most athletic. Wasn't necessarily considered the five-star recruit or what have you. So, you know, being sort of the try-hard guy, the guy who sort of relays the coach's message, that was the value I've always felt I brought to the team. And I didn't have a problem with embracing that. Some guys did. But I believed in those messages as well because I felt like I was an example of that. If a coach needed someone that he could – hold in front of the team and say, okay, this is an example of if you do what's required of you, do what's asked of you, you work hard, you put in the extra work, this is what you can become. And so, you know, sometimes that's harder for guys who are naturally gifted as athletes,
right,
or in certain areas. But for guys who realize that they have to work harder, that they have to do more, you know, we embrace that. And so I've never shied away from that. It got me a scholarship to a Division I Big Ten university that I never would have dreamed I would have ever had the opportunity to have. As a role player, special teams player, backup player, it afforded me a 9-year NFL career that I don't think I would have had if I didn't have that sort of mentality and embrace that. And not only that, and it's helped me in my afterlife away from sports and doing what I've been doing for the last 17 years with WIP, that I started as a part-time guy who then moved to working nights and taking shifts where I could get them at, to being brought up through the ranks. And so that has served me well. That's just just been my personality and mentality my entire life.
And think about like in Philadelphia, it's the guys that were kind of the glue guys in the locker room that might not have been the biggest stars that have gone on to have successful media careers. You look at Keith Jones. Keith Jones did it right. He's a grinder. And as a player, as a grinder, as you know, going on IP all the time. And look at Jonesy now. Look at yourself. You look at Batalico. You look at – there's a lot of guys. Larry Anderson. You look at guys that
I feel like Jonesy set an unrealistic bar for us. Because now I want to be a
president.
GM. Yeah. Now I want to run the team.
Right. Mike, you'd be awesome. All right, man. You should go for it. I'm telling you.
Jonesy stepped out there. Now he's running the Flyers. I'm like, holy cow. Yeah, Jonesy,
Joe Banner's time is up, Mike. It's time for you to step in.
So when did you – I mean, I guess you played the game obviously very well in the sense that – you were always good with the media, right?
Mm-hmm.
You respected the media. Because if you don't respect the media, then it's tough to then get a job with the media.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so, but you also, as you mentioned, you grinded it out. You did shifts that, you know, maybe star athletes that played in the 9 years in the NFL wouldn't do.
I did interns while I was a player.
That's unbelievable.
With Comcast Sportsnet.
That's awesome.
In the offseason.
Yeah.
And,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. Did you see yourself being that? Like, when you were playing, could you see yourself – did you look down the road like that?
I did.
I think broadcasting is my next career.
I did. And I had a sense of it's what I wanted to do coming out of college. That was my major in college communication. So I was very good with the media when I was in college, when I started to actually put thought and effort into how I presented myself in interviews and I would watch myself and how I sounded or what have you. When you start to consciously try to – you know, correct some of those things and at least present yourself in a certain manner, that's when I realized, like, this is something that I want to get into. And so, you know, I had guys like Troy Vincent and Bobby Taylor as mentors
right.
that sort of helped guide me while I was a player and said, you know, listen, don't wait until you're done playing. You know, these are things you need to get involved with while you're playing. And what better market to do it in than the Philadelphia market? And one other shout out to a guy that honestly, really, when I talk about doing the internship with Comcast Sportsnet, Derek Boyko, our old public
PR guy,
our old PR guy.
He went under the Bills, right?
Yeah, he's with Buffalo now. He was the guy who helped me get started and doing stuff in the offseason.
Because he saw talent in you.
Yes, and I told him this was something that I wanted to do. So he said, man, why wait until you're done? You're around here during the offseason.
Yeah.
You can actually get the work and the practice in now. And so I did it. I did it without worrying about compensation and all those things. I just wanted the reps.
Yeah.
I just wanted the reps.
Smart.
I just wanted the reps, and Comcast was gracious with me back then. Michael Barkan and all those guys, they were gracious with me back then, and they brought me over, and I got to sit in on production meetings. I got to see how things work behind the scenes. I did this stuff for like 2 years. I really did, and they always told me, whenever you're done playing and you want to get involved, here's my number. Call me when you're done.
Well, you were saying hi to some of our kitchen staff who I know you know, and you were asking about Spike asking, and he's like, well, I've worked with his dad for 2 years, and he was one of the early guys that they set you up with on one of those programs. But how was that in terms of, you know?
Did you feel forsaken?
Right. We had Howard in a couple weeks ago. But as an athlete, you know, some athletes have a problem with Howard.
Yeah.
Forget the argument that a guy didn't play. That's kind of a weak argument. But,
sure.
But a guy who's so opinionated that didn't play.
There's more of that. Yeah,
Well, how were you? Because that's tough as an athlete to be with somebody who has all those opinions. Well, no, wait a minute. That's not how it is.
Yeah.
This is how it is. Was that hard for you?
Yeah, we disagreed a lot. And it was usually about philosophies and how he views the athlete and how they should go about their business versus the organization, you know, what have you. And I viewed a lot of things through an athlete's eyes, and I'm in this position to actually be able to speak up for guys. So I viewed a lot of things from the athlete's perspective. But the further I've gotten away from the game, I sort of can see both sides of things. And to your question, Tom, about working with Howard, in the moment, I probably didn't feel the same way I feel in hindsight. And now, in the moment, it was sort of fighters into your corner, and you come out when the bell rings, and you're duking it out every day. So there wasn't a certain level of appreciation at that time for one another, or respect for one another, as it was just more important to be right or loud about your opinion, versus whereas now I can see Howard and understand sort of his method to his madness, and why he believes things and says things. Again, I don't agree with most of the things he says, but I believe there is genuine authenticity there with what he says and what he believes. And a lot of it is through his hard work and his dedication to being at games, to being around people, talking to people, things of that nature that you don't necessarily see unless you've been in this business long enough.
And
so
now you're going to be working with his son.
Yeah.
Spike.
Yeah. Whom I've loved for a lot of years. And Spike used to call up during the show when me and his dad had just finished arguing or what have you, and he would try to break the ice and be like, dude, don't kill my dad, man. So he would call us
That's
on the
funny.
Air and,
right,
and right. say, like, would you guys stop arguing? Yeah. Like,
but it makes for great radio, too.
Yeah.
It's entertaining. That's what it's all about.
Yeah.
Is it Ike and Spike or Spike and Ike?
What do you mean?
Well,
the name of the show?
Yeah, when you start that show.
You know what? I don't think they've decided what they're going to name it. I'll just say this. It's one guy joining the show.
That's right.
And that's so, like, yeah.
Somebody's
like,
been here for 16 years.
Yeah, one guy has been there. So, one guy's joining the show.
Yeah, I can spot.
Not that it matters, but.
Yeah.
You know.
Somehow Burgoyne grabbed top billing in this podcast.
I did. Right? It was in my contract.
I need to get that back.
Well, listen, if they ever told me it mattered during contract negotiations, then it would be a real issue.
Then it'd be an issue.
All right, one last story before we get to the quiz.
Go ahead.
And I'm not going to tell the full story, so don't give me that look. But you mentioned Lou Piniella. I didn't recognize Lou Piniella one time when I'm in Puerto Rico. I will not tell you the long story, but I body surfed right into him, had a 20-minute conversation with him, told all about the minor league prospects. I'm just thinking this guy told me he worked for the Seattle Mariners, and he's asking me all these questions about the prospects.
He's talking to Lou Piniella for 20 minutes.
I had no idea because it's in the surf.
I was going to say that he had a beard and stuff.
Well, I don't know. He had a hair wet. He's in the middle of surfing. I crashed into his legs body surfing. So now the next thing, I screwed up the whole Seattle Mariners organization because he went back and said, I talked to some scout from the Phillies, and they told me about all these guys, and I'm just BSing. So anyway, I'm bringing that story up because I brought him, John Marks, to one of the Phillies ownership parties where we have spring training.
Yeah, yeah.
And Ike was talking to our skipper, Rob Thompson, for a long time and didn't realize it's the manager.
Is that right, Ike?
Because I guess he didn't see him in the hat, the uniform, right?
It's the worst. I'm telling you, it is the worst, man. It is the worst. He did not look like a manager. I'm just telling you.
Right.
and quite frankly, and there's no offense to Charlie Manuel, Skip. But I can easily distinguish Charlie Manuel from anybody else. Yeah. He's 6'4", he's tall.
Rob blends in.
You know, but he didn't have the hat on. Right. Hair looked good. He had a suit on. Like he didn't have a suit and tie on. He just had a sports jacket with his shirt on.
You thought he's one of our sponsors?
I swear to God, I thought he was a sponsor, man. I had no idea.
Yeah, wow, this guy knows a lot about baseball.
Listen, exactly. Hold on. So I got another story for you real quick. This may be even worse. I don't know if it's worse than that one, though, because that one was pretty bad.
When did you realize it was Rob Thompson?
I think somebody had to tell me. I don't know if you told me or Fritz, Jack Fritz might have told me or what have you. And I'm like, man, he really is the second best looking guy in baseball.
Second best.
He didn't look like a baseball manager to me at all. So check this out. At the Eagles game this past season, I forget which game it was. It might have been it was one of the games. So Scott Fransky and his son is at the game.
Gus, yeah.
They're going over to the booth. So we're in the press box where the media is at. And so this is where we usually watch the game at. You got the TV monitors. You've been up there. You got the TV monitors there. And so Ava Graham, who's our assistant brand manager over at WIP, you know, periodically she could bring somebody who's part of a sales team or part of a sponsorship by to say hello to us at the booth or what have you. And she had done that earlier on the pregame show. So here she is with Scott Fransky and his son. The game is just starting. So I'm into the game. I see them in the press box. They're standing there talking. And Ava gets my attention and she points and I thought she just wanted me to say hello to some people.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it was Scott Fransky and his son. So I gave the quickest little nonchalant, like, hey, how you guys doing? And I went right back to the game without batting an eye. She comes over like 3 minutes later. And she's like, you know that's Scott Fransky, right? I'm like, oh, I didn't know that was Scott Fransky. So I had to get up. Obviously, I'm embarrassed now. Now I'm like, holy crap, I just big time Scott Fransky like he was nobody.
And Gus.
By the way, Scott has, in my defense, he had a jersey on, an Eagles jersey on. Yeah. And a ball cap on.
Yeah. Yes.
So I didn't like he had a Scully cap on.
Right.
I had no idea with a hoodie. So it was cold. So he got the hoodie on with the jersey on. Yeah. I had no idea.
He's a radio guy. I'm sure he's used to it.
Once
he talks, you would have said.
I must have felt like 2 feet tall. I felt 2 feet tall. I had to run over there. I'm apologizing. I'm like, oh, my God, Scott, I didn't know, man. I didn't mean to do that. I'm like, that was embarrassing. But I don't know. The topper might be worse. That might be worse. I actually stood there talking to him and didn't realize it was him. That was bad.
Why is this guy from Chick-fil-A keep talking to
him? Yeah, right.
All right. Ike, are you ready for your quiz?
He did look good, though, in his outfit. I got to admit that.
We're going to wrap up your quiz. You got to get 6 out of 8. 8 questions.
Right. John, you worked hard at this quiz.
Multiple choice, right? Multiple choice.
At least I'm getting multiple. I used to love those tests.
Yeah.
Multiple choice.
And Tom Burgoyne does not know these questions, so you can use him for one life.
Oh, as a lifeline.
If you want.
My record's not good.
But it's about your life. So, yes.
It's about me.
And his record's
should know better than I do.
Okay. All right, ready? And six out of eight.
Six out of eight.
You have kids anymore that would that are the age where they would want something signed by the Fanatic?
No,
picture of the Fanatic. We'll figure something out.
Well, you know what? My daughter, she's a big Fanatic fan. She's always enjoyed it.
He doesn't sign anyway.
Fanatic's too big. It's going to cost you if you ask Fanatic for an autograph.
Right, she's 18, but yeah, she's
still get you something. We'll get you something Fanatic related if you get six out of eight.
All right, here we go. Six out of eight.
Thanks for the visit. Let's get down to business. Now here's your chance to show how much you really know. He might get grumpy if he can't stop you with Brazier's Quiz.
You went to Aiken High School, right, in Cincinnati, Ohio. Which of these celebrities did not go to Aiken High School? So three went to Aiken High School, one did
there
not.
There three other celebrities that went to Aiken High School?
Come on, man. Yeah, come on. Wow, Tom.
All right.
Yeah, believe me, it's better
than... I should know all of them, too.
All right, here we go. Ready? A, Jim O'Brien, who's NFL kicker for the Super Bowl champion Baltimore Colts. B, Scott Servais, former MLB pitcher, actually pitched for the Phillies in 1988. Former NHL prolific goal scorer Brett Hull and NFL linebacker Dixon Edwards. So was it?
Brett Hull.
Brett Hull. Did not go to Aiken High School. You knew that right away.
Yes.
And celebrity is a pretty general term there, man. Some of those guys you were mentioning.
Well, I know
are they
three
celebrities?
You do? Okay.
Yeah, I know all three of them. Dixon Edwards went to Michigan State, too. His dad was the principal there when I was there.
Tom, you think I'm going to every high
Scott
school?
Scott Servais played for the Reds, too.
For the high schools, that's really good because I do this a lot.
Yeah.
Believe me, my high school, I don't
and
even
Jim
know.
Jim O'Brien is the only he's the only kicker to – did he win the MVP?
He might have. It was early.
It was the Colts, right?
Colts, yeah.
Yeah, because they won 6-3.
Yeah, so it had to have been.
Yeah.
All right, for one. So
he might have been the MVP.
As we know, you went to Michigan State.
Yep.
Which of these celebs did not go to Michigan State?
Oh, okay? I know this one, yeah.
Actress Farrah Fawcett, Phillies Hall of Famer Robin Roberts, actor James Caan, and former Flyer Rod Brind'Amour. So is it Farrah Fawcett, Robin Roberts, James Caan, or Rod Brind'Amour?
Was either Rod Brind'Amour or Farrah Fawcett.
Okay.
I know the other two for sure.
You can use the lifeline if you want to.
No, I'm just trying to remember, do I ever remember anything about Farrah Fawcett at Michigan State?
Well, you had her poster up in your
Everybody had the poster.
Well, we're older than you too, so.
Yeah.
And Rod Brind'Amour is a hockey player, so Michigan State under Ron Mason was one of the better hockey college programs during the time I was there.
Which then would lead you to
Farrah Fawcett.
Farrah Fawcett's correct.
She went to the University of Texas.
Yeah, okay, Tom Burgoyne gave me that.
I know her whole story.
He gave me that random celebrity about an hour ago.
I did not know Brind'Amour went to state, though.
Yeah, that's
awesome. Yeah, but it makes sense, though. Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah.
All right. You were selected in the fifth round of the 1998 NFL draft. Which one of these players was drafted after you? Okay. Three were drafted before you. One was drafted after you. Jeremiah Trotter, Brian Griese, Hines Ward, Matt Hasselbeck.
Jeremiah Trotter was drafted before me.
Then you got Brian Griese, Hines Ward, Matt Hasselbeck.
Brian Griese was drafted before me as well.
And so now it's down to Hines Ward or Matt Hasselbeck.
And so was Hines Ward.
So you're going Matt Hasselbeck.
Yes.
3-for-3.
Hey,
see that logic he's throwing out there?
That was impressive. I actually saw smoke coming out of your ears right there, right?
Well, I couldn't remember it. Hasselbeck is a fifth-round pick, though.
He was a sixth round pick.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Your first year with the Eagles was 1998. Which of one of these guys was not on that team? Okay. In the 1998, your first year team, who was not on that team? Kevin Turner, Barry Gardner, Jason Dunn, Mike Zordich.
Barry Gardner.
4-for-4. Bang. All right.
BG was drafted in 99.
Okay. All right.
In 2000.
Just by a year.
In 2004. Which on the Super Bowl team, which defensive member led the team in tackles with 90? Now they include solo and assisted. Okay, led the team in tackles in 2004. Was it Michael Lewis, Sheldon Brown, Brian Dawkins, Jeremiah Trotter? No, you know what? It was Michael Lewis.
Was it Mike?
It was Michael Lewis. Yeah.
Wow.
All right. You still have room though.
All right.
Yeah. You got room for it. You got three more. This I don't know. This could be the easiest question. Could be the hardest question. You played in the 2004 Pro Bowl. Right? Do you remember, if going back like a time machine, who caught the first touchdown of the game? Was it Torrey Holt, Marvin Harrison, Antonio Gates, or Hines Ward? Torrey Holt, Marvin Harrison, Antonio Gates, Hines Ward. It was just to let you know, it was a 67-yard bomb.
I kind of remember Hines Ward.
From Peyton Manning.
Hines Ward.
Nope, Marvin Harrison.
Marvin Harrison?
Yeah, that's all right. I think you'll get the next two.
Yeah, I don't remember much from that Pro Bowl, yeah.
Number seven, how many total tackles did you have in your career? Okay, total tackles. Was it 215, 198, 242, or 185? 215, 198, 242, 185.
Oh, 242.
242 is correct. Yeah. All right, now you're going to be a winner if you get this last one.
All right.
What is Jack Fritz, your buddy Jack Fritz, you've been working with him for how many years?
Jack came on in 19, I think.
All right.
It's almost 5 years.
What
he
is Jack
came on in August of 19.
What is Jack Fritz's middle name? I don't know if it was ever brought up on the show, but what is his middle name?
Of course, Jack.
No?
No, his first name is John.
John, right, but Jack the nickname off. So his middle name, like,
give the choices, John.
Oh,
yeah. Because Jack's more of a nickname off the John.
Okay, you're
right. You know what I mean? So this is his true middle name.
Yeah.
Is it Chandler, Ross, Joseph, or Gunther?
No, it's Ross.
Ross.
Bang.
Got it.
Yeah, it's Ross.
How did you know that?
Because he said it.
Oh, you said it before.
He said it before, yeah. I jumped the gun with the whole Jack name. Yeah, no, it was Ross. Yeah.
Ross. See, yeah. I thought I'd try to throw I've little friends
him,
in there, too.
Because I've called him John Ross. That's an old Bengals wide receiver.
I remember John Ross.
Yeah, John Ross, yeah.
Might have had him on my fantasy team one year.
That's good trivia.
Yeah, look at that.
Trivia, all right, man. And you get yourself
you're a winner, Ike.
A fanatic item. We'll
find something around here. Ike, this is great. Thanks for coming down. You know, I know you got to run, right?
Yeah, it's all good, man. No, thank you guys for having me, man.
You can grab some Maryland crab soup on your way out, too.
No, listen.
Get something from Frankie Two Scoops out there.
I know, some ice cream, right? See you guys down at Clearwater, man.
Yeah,
in a couple weeks.
Yeah, we'll see you down there. Thanks, John. Yeah, that's probably our next show we're going to be doing from Clearwater.
From down there, yeah.
Thanks for tuning in, everybody, and we'll see you next time on Phillies Backstage.